Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with Opel. Crossland, Corsa and Mokka. Three good reasons to visit the Opel Open Road event.
The Health Products Regulatory Authority, HPRA, today publishes its 2020 annual report, and much of their work during that time has focused on regulating and assessing vaccines and treatment for COVID-19. And here to tell us more about that is the CEO of the HPRA, Dr. Lorraine Nolan. Lorraine, you're very welcome. Thank you for coming in today. We've spoken on the programme before about the work of your organisation, particularly when it comes to regulation of COVID vaccines. Can you just remind us about that role, the role that you play in Ireland and in a wider Europe? Context.
Good morning, Claire. Yes, and I think sometimes when we hear so many announcements publicly in relation to the various approvals of the EMA in relation to vaccines, it's sometimes overlooked that the EMA have a coordinating role in relation to those approvals. What actually happens is it is the scientific experts from the agencies across the member states, and that includes my own agency, the HPRA, that have been very heavily involved in reviewing, assessing and making conclusions on that data that comes through from all of the various scientific evidence, including the clinical studies. The EMA operates through two committees. There is its main committee for the approval of medicines and vaccines, which is known as the Committee for Human Medicines Products. It also has a safety committee, which we, in both committees, we have representatives. So we have been very much so to the forefront of that work at a European level. And as an agency, we have a particular expertise scientifically in relation to infectious diseases. So we really have been playing our part throughout the pandemic. And just to put that in perspective, in my own agency, we have 370 staff in total, but we would have a community, I would call it, of 200 experts. So that would include our clinicians, our pharmacists, our life scientists, our statisticians, inspectors, who are always, each day of the week, in terms of their roles, contributing to the work of the European Medicines Agency.
Just on this new variant, which we've been talking to the Minister about just before you came in, what role will your organisation play in assessing the efficacy of the existing COVID vaccines against this new variant?
What will happen then is, I mean, first of all, just to say about that, obviously this is a concerning situation, but we do have to keep perspective because there's a lot we don't know, and more evidence will be emerging very quickly. Viruses mutate all the time. The most important thing is that we do keep track of those mutations. They're detected as soon as they emerged. And then the machinery kind of kicks into play there from the point of view of evaluating at a scientific level what the impact of the new variant is. First of all, on the disease itself, in terms of transmissibility, in terms of severity of infection. But as you've said there, Claire, in the beginning, on vaccines and their effectiveness. I guess, you know, we know scientifically viruses mutate all of the time. So in the background, the regulatory system has been preparing for that. You know, each time a new variant has emerged, this concern in relation to the effectiveness of the vaccines is always something that is kept closely under review. So from an evidential viewpoint, we have agreed pathways up front, and the scientific requirements are very well known by the companies, and it will be an accelerated pathway if we find that effectiveness is impaired to the stage that we may need new vaccines. Okay. We don't have to begin from scratch. We can build on what's already there.
Okay, and there seems to be general agreement across the scientific community that this mutation is different. This one is going to be more challenging.
It is different. I mean, as you know, and it's very well flagged at this stage, all of these vaccines, they target the spike protein of the virus. And what is concerning about this particular mutation is the number of the mutations that are in the spike protein. Having said that, you know, the vaccines do present, I mean, they're very effective, or they have very high levels of efficacy. I mean, anything in the region of 90% efficacy for a vaccine, it can't get much better than that in terms of efficacy. And they produce a very broad-based response to the vaccine. So, you know, it may not be that that's all knocked out. We may see a situation where that is reduced. And I guess at the moment, I suppose we are expecting that that may happen. But it is a question of how much that reduction might be, and then what the impact of that will be as well too. Okay. But I would qualify that and say it's still early days and we don't know yet.
Yes, and it is going to take a number of weeks at least, is what we've heard. Now, last week on Thursday, the EMA approved the use of Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine for children aged between 5 and 11. What role did the HPRA play in contributing to that approval?
Well, that approval came on foot of a specific clinical study in children, and my agency, through the committee, through the the Medicines Committee and the EMA would have been involved in assessing, reviewing that data and coming to the conclusions on the suitability for the use of the vaccine in children within that age group with their other expertise community across the European network. So what the EMA has approved, as you said there, is the use of the vaccine for children aged 5 to 12. And in reviewing the data in relation to the clinical studies, what has been found, first of all, from a safety viewpoint, and that is obviously everybody's, you know, primary concern for all medicines, and particularly when you're talking about vaccines for children, that the safety of the vaccine, the Pfizer vaccine, in children of that age group compares very well with what has been seen in older age groups, and no new safety concerns have been identified. In addition, from looking at the efficacy of the vaccine, the immune response, so that would be the antibody levels that are generated in children, compare very well with older populations. And the efficacy of the vaccine, again, is very high in this age group. I think it came in at 90.7% is the figure that's determined.
I think people listening, you know, might think if the EMA approves something, it's just a question of us here in this country rubber stamping that approval. How do you feel about that? Clearly what you're describing is not how it works.
No, the EMA's role is a coordination role. I mean, every medicine that is approved through what is known as the centralised process in Europe, the assessment and the scientific evaluation work is actually carried out by the agencies of the member states. So that happens always as a continuous process. It is the way we work. And there are reasons for that as to why that system exists in that way, Claire. And I think it's very reassuring for the public, because if you think of the number of experts that I would have said that I have in my agency, if that is replicated across 20 member states, it really tells you the level of rigor that goes into reviewing the scientific evidence behind, you know, the approval of all of those medicines, but particularly in these vaccines in the context.
So what would you say then to parents who are wondering today whether they should accept the Pfizer vaccine once it's offered to their 5 to 11-year-old?
Well, the approval now has come from the EMA, so we will follow the same process as we have at every stage along with these vaccines. Our National Immunisation Advisory Committee will now consider that approval, but also as a committee, they have a very broad range of expertise. And as I said, you know, scientifically, this is a very fast moving space in the context of the pandemic. They will look at the evidence from, you know, many perspectives, you know, public health situation, hospital capacity, et cetera, et cetera. And they will advise and make recommendations to the Chief Medical Officer, and ultimately the Minister will decide to accept that advice or not. So first of all, that has to happen. And, you know, NIAC are actively working on that. And we do need to give them the space to give that the full review that it needs. In relation to the use of the vaccine in children, I think we all know that children in general are not as susceptible to COVID. It tends to be a much more mild illness in children.
And that's what the parents who argue against this, that's what they say. They don't need it. It's about protecting other people.
Well, I'll come to that in a moment. I think, first of all, in relation, and we're speaking here about healthy children, there will be children that have underlying health issues. And definitely, I think the case for vaccination is probably more clear cut in relation to those children. But for healthy children, yes, this is a complex decision. I have three children myself. So again, that is something that I will be thinking about as well too. So when we know children are not at risk, we have seen, and they are rare cases where children do get severe illness, they do have to be hospitalised. And then we have seen some of the complexities that can occur in children rarely, such as multisystem inflammatory syndrome, and also children in rare cases can develop long COVID as well too. So obviously vaccine will protect children from becoming infected, but there's also indirect benefits in children as well too, which are really important from a well-being viewpoint. First of all, I think, you know, vaccination would offer the possibility, I think, of keeping children in school, keeping children in extracurricular activities, but also the possibility of maybe reducing stress and anxiety in children that they may have in terms of catching COVID themselves or even passing it on to others. So I think we really have to focus here, you know, on the benefit to the child. It's not just the benefit from infection, but it is broader. And in no way do I want to preempt any decision that or recommendation that NIAC may make on this. But what I really would say to parents is, because it is complex, you know, we owe it to our children to really use trusted sources of expert information. and make an informed choice for your child, and you work on the basis of the best information that's available.
How concerned are you about disinformation and people going to unreliable sources and trusting those unreliable sources for their information around vaccines?
It's always a concern for us. I mean, I think it has been a concern throughout the entire pandemic. But what I will say is that at no stage and throughout the pandemic, every decision we have made has always been based on evidence. It's based on science. It's based on fact. We were very clear, even when vaccines were rolled out in the beginning, that, you know, when you move from clinical trials involving tens of thousands of people to a usage that goes up to millions and on to billions, and at this stage we've used 7 billion of these vaccines on a global scale, there are always unexpected and very rare issues which may throw up in real world use. And that has happened. You know, I'm speaking about those rarer blood clotting issues.
And just to say to people, those reports go to your office,
don't
they?
That is a very important point, Claire. Those reports come to our agency. And what I will say is those issues are actually picked up from the rigorous safety monitoring that we carry out once a vaccine is launched on the market.
How many reports have you had of adverse reactions?
To date, in relation to adverse reaction reports, we've had 16,000 reports on a vaccine usage of 7 million. So at all stages, we have rigorously evaluated this. We've never held back. We have been fully transparent with the public in terms of what the profile of those side effects looks like in terms of, you know, the typical milder effects and then those very rare unexpected side effects. And I think the public have really responded to that, because if you think about it, it has been an entirely transparent process. We haven't hidden anything, and yet we have achieved the levels of vaccine uptake in this country we have. And I think that in part is down to the level of information, the level of evidence and the transparent approach we took.
Have you been able to verify how many of the 16,000 reports were actually linked to the vaccine?
We go through each report, Claire, and we look at them to see whether or not they link to the vaccine. You know, we have to remember that when people are vaccinated, you know, health events and normal life continues irrespective of whether you're vaccinated or not. But we throw the net really widely to get as much information as possible. Each are evaluated, and it's not just an evaluation by the experts in my own agency. Again, this is very much network based. Our data goes through to the European system. It is evaluated and trended across all of the information that is coming on safety from the member states and indeed on a global perspective. And out of that, then, we determine whether or not there is a possibility that the issue is associated with the vaccine or not.
Dr. Nolan, we'll have to leave it there for now, but many thanks for coming in. That's Dr. Lorraine Nolan, Chief Executive of the HPRA.